Dave and Dejanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
Thanks for joining us. We are keeping an eye on the Supreme Court as they listen to arguments about presidential immunity for former President Donald Trump. Debbie is off today, so filling in for her is Associate Director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics, Morgan Lyon-Cotty. Thank you so much. I'm very excited to hear your take on presidential immunity.
We're going to have a discussion.
And we're definitely going to have a discussion. So here on the show, we like to launch things at 9:06 every single day. Sometimes it's 9:05.
Sequence engaged.
All right. The launch is brought to you by Master Electrical Services, home of the upfront pricing guarantee. And here are the three things that Morgan and I want you to know.
Countdown. Three.
All right. It's getting down to the wire for many candidates as the GOP, the Democrats, the convention's getting ready for this Saturday. Who's going to make it onto the primary ballot, and will signatures and money make the difference for some candidates?
Yeah, for those that gathered signatures, this could be the icing on the top, and for those who didn't, it's sink or swim time.
Lean all the way into it. A lot of people are doing that with the convention, but boy, that is hedging your bet.
It's dicey.
It is dicey.
Countdown to...
Your kids probably just took this, if they're a junior. 1.4 million kids in the U.S. take the ACT. That's what we do here in Utah. That four-hour monstrosity. 215 questions, English, math, reading, science, plus an essay and writing section. I spoke to a high school senior that got a perfect score, and he thought he was set.
I thought that was my golden ticket into any college I wanted, which is not true, really, in retrospect.
It's not true, because that perfect score got him nothing but rejection letters from all the colleges he applied to. Do you have any strong feelings about the ACT?
Yeah, it used to be a rite of passage, and now with different standards, it's a whole new ball game, and people are trying to navigate it.
Launch countdown one.
The Supreme Court is hearing arguments today focused on the extent of immunity that presidents should receive from criminal prosecution. Former President Trump has argued that he should enjoy absolute immunity. John Sauer is arguing the former president's case before the court.
Without presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, there can be no presidency as we know it.
This is a conversation we really have not had for generations, and it is really important. And the idea that we will paralyze presidents if they have to deal with consequences is one side of the story.
Dave and Dejanovic.
The launch.
Commence.
Dave and Dejanovic. Special coverage of the top national story.
Morgan, you're absolutely right. Like, we really haven't had this conversation. We haven't been forced into it, because I don't know if we've ever had a president like Trump before.
We have not. I think we can say we have not.
We certainly have not, and in several different ways, because not only was he not a politician, he was a businessman. He was no stranger to courtrooms over the last several decades. He spent a lot of time being sued by this company or defending himself on this on so many levels from a business side. And when he came into the White House, it was almost like, getting sued, that's just what happens. You know, having a team of lawyers, that's just what you do. That's so unique to him specifically. He just has never seemed all that fluttered by being in a courtroom.
He hasn't. There's a big difference, though, between being sued and dealing with civil litigation and criminal prosecution.
Right.
And I said we haven't dealt with this conversation in many, many years, really since Nixon in the 1970s. But the country really didn't have to dive too far into that because he was pardoned so quickly. We actually didn't deal with a true impeachment and conviction process, a true criminal investigation. Well, no, there was an investigation, but a courtroom process. So this is all new territory. And I think in the United States, we like to pride ourselves on being a different type of country, a different type of democracy in which our leaders are held accountable. So this conversation that we will paralyze the president if they have to deal with these criminal charges, I think if a lot of Americans took a step back and took away party, I think they would really have to, you know, put some deep thought into that.
Absolutely. So often when we hear the questions being asked by the justices, and the Supreme Court is listening to these arguments right now, you can get a little bit of an idea where they're leaning or where their thought process is. Let me play a little bit from Associate Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson as she's questioning Trump's lawyer, John Sauer.
Let me put this worry on the table. If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office?
And that is a great question. I mean, that it is a little bit scary to think that if they truly have absolute immunity, then how far does that stretch?
Right. And I think that one of the things we often go to is we think about wartime decisions and will a president be held accountable for those? Some of the really controversial things Trump did that we're talking about with these cases have to do with elections. And what can you do while you're in office trying to hold on to that office? Is that a policy? Is that part of presidential power? Or is it, you know, part of a campaign? Those lines are really gray and really fuzzy. And what I'm watching for also is some of the questions the justices are asking. They're not necessarily, as is often the case, about the specific cases. It starts to become about a greater issue. So is this actually about presidential power and what presidents can or should do?
Because you could probably go back. I know you're quite the historian. You know, you could look at every president in a situation where it's Bush and WMDs, or if it's, leaving Afghanistan with Biden or Benghazi, you know, it can stretch so far on so many levels. Just about every president you could look at and think, well, if someone had an inkling or a motivation, then they probably could come after a president for that.
And I think that's where Trump's attorneys are trying to make this argument, that we will paralyze the president. Justice Jackson's words of, okay, but how, if we don't have a standard, if we're not holding people accountable, are we actually emboldening this? I don't envy the judges today. I've never really wanted to be a Supreme Court justice, but this is one of those decisions that they have to be recognizing this has historic consequences and we have to be so careful.
And I think most people can look at this and say, we've elected this person is the most powerful individual in the world, the leader of the free world. And they have to make impossible decisions. Decisions you and I will never have to even wade a toe into.
Right.
And to second guess and play armchair quarterback on every single decision, which we already do, but to now enhance that with the possibility of jail time, why would you ever run?
I don't know why someone would want to be president. I think it's a crazy thing. But there's also, we have to recognize, there's a difference between these are impossible decisions, the consequences are people's lives in many cases, but also when a person knowingly makes a decision that is against criminal, that is against the law.
Yeah.
We have criminal laws, or we have, you know, these codes. So this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about the impossible decisions, wartime. We're talking about whether someone knowingly breaks the law, and when that someone is the president, should there be consequences?
And how much freedom do they have to make those decisions?
Right.
Absolutely. What kind of precedent? I love that question that you asked. What kind of precedent does this set? We'll talk to KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas next as he breaks down both sides of the argument.
Nathan Dujanovic. Special coverage of the top national story.
Arguments are currently underway at the Supreme Court surrounding a case regarding presidential immunity, something that John Sauer, who is former President Trump's attorney, is bringing before the court.
Without presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, there can be no presidency as we know it.
They want absolute immunity, kind of demanding it. And Associate Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson is responding this way.
Let me put this worry on the table. If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office?
Emboldened to commit crimes while they're in office.
With filling abandon.
What's that?
Commit crimes with abandon.
With abandon. At which, when you look around the world, a lot of leaders do exactly that. And I think that's part of what makes the United States so unique, is we do hold our politicians, or at least we pretend to hold our politicians to a higher standard. But absolute immunity, I don't think any reasonable person can hear that term and think, oh yeah, no, absolute immunity all the time. Is there more nuance here that we're not seeing?
That's what I'd like to ask Greg. That it just seems like this humongous big question. Would a more narrow ask from the Trump camp been more, you know, would be interpreting that differently? It just seems so broad right now.
Yes, this is not Monopoly. Your get out of jail free card, no matter what, doesn't make any sense, I think, to the any common sense, at least. Greg Skordis joins us right now, KSL legal analyst. And Greg, the term absolute immunity, I've always felt just full-on Happy Days Fonzie, jump the shark. It's just such a broad definition. Why in the world would they go with such a broad definition that so easily can be shot down, in my opinion?
Well, and it has been, Dave, and that's a good question, because they are asking for that. But the Supreme Court has already narrowed the scope of the argument. And what they're saying is the immunity exists, or they're trying to decide whether the former president enjoys immunity from criminal prosecution for conduct alleged to involve official acts during his tenure in office. So it's limited to those things. Criminal prosecution, official acts during his tenure in office. So it's not blanket immunity. It has to reach those three. Those are the three thresholds that they're deciding today. In other words, while he's serving as president, and he's doing things that involve his office, presidential duties, should he have some level of immunity for those acts? And that's the narrow question that the Supreme Court is deciding today. Of course, the overlying case is a election interference case in Washington, D.C., a criminal case. And he's saying, well, I was trying to make sure the election was free and fair. I was trying to make sure that I felt that there was some fraud involved. I was trying to make sure that it wasn't that way. And I was just acting as president to make sure everything was done correctly. So he's trying to limit it to that, hoping that that will give him that level of presidential immunity that you guys are talking about.
It's so interesting because we were previously talking about, you know, there's just a vast array of issues that presidents have to make decisions on. But when it comes to elections, especially an election the president is running in, it's so difficult to see, you know, what was self-serving? What was actually a campaign decision? What was an election decision? How do the justices sort of parse through that?
That's a great question, Morgan, and that's what we're hearing today. That's what the argument's about. Because, look, it wasn't like he was, ordering the execution of a foreign diplomat or something like that. This is just trying to make sure the election's done correctly. And is that part of his duties as president? That's the first question. It really, is that Congress's job? Is it the state's job? Or is it something he should be doing? And was it really something that he was in his wheelhouse? So most legal experts, Morgan, are saying that the president has a weak argument. Most people believe he will not prevail on this. But a bigger question ends up being, how long does the Supreme Court take to make a decision? Because if they don't decide this case until June or July, is it even possible that this case in D.C. will get to trial before November? And if it doesn't, and if he wins the president, can he just have the case dismissed? So the timing of this is as important as the ruling itself.
Greg, one of the arguments I've heard is there was so much evidence President Trump should have known better. He should have known that the election interference was bogus. But, you know, the election happened in November. January 6th happens, you know, just a matter of weeks later. His argument of, like, should have known better, or he shouldn't have pushed back so hard against, you know, the voting. What do you make of that? I mean, in hindsight, we look at it 3-4 years removed, and we have a preponderance of evidence. How does it change when he was just weeks out of this?
Well, so what's going to happen is the government's going to rely on their the lawyers and the staff members and the experts that were consulting the president at the time, because some of them were telling him, this is wrong. You can't win this. This is out of your wheelhouse. So when it comes to his knowing, his mental state, sure, we can look back on it now and say he should have known better. But the government's going to show that they actually had people advising him at the time that he should know better, that he shouldn't have done this. And that's going to put his mens rea, his guilty mind, if you will, in front of the jury, and they'll have to decide whether or not he was just reckless in his conduct and wasn't really thinking it through, or whether he should have known better, because people were telling him, hey, you're wrong. You're not going to be able to make this prevail.
But he also had people whispering in the other side of his ear saying, no, go forward. This is absolutely
right. No, you're exactly right. And that's going to be his defense. Hey, I relied on the experts. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a constitutional law analyst. And people were telling me this is what I can do and this is what I should do. And I was relying on that. So, yeah, I mean, it's up to the jury to decide whether he really crossed the boundaries that you guys are talking about.
Greg Skordas, thank you as always. Such a great conversation. Our legal analyst here at KSL, also a host of KSL at Night. And Morgan, I think when you do have a more narrowed scope, that's what the justices are looking at. What kind of precedent does this set for future presidents?
Well, it depends on which way we go, right? If they do rule that he is held accountable, then that is the existing precedent. I think it is the idea that we all have is that presidents, just like the rest of us, shouldn't break the law. If it's the opposite side, I think this is a whole new territory that the country's going to have to navigate.
It would be monumental on a level that it's almost hard to comprehend how far-reaching this could be. It may feel like a very narrow scope right now, but when the Supreme Court rules on something, all of a sudden it becomes expanded and people start challenging, oh, does it mean this? Does it fit in this mold or down this lane as well? And it could just expand exponentially.
It could. And people, again, we view the world through such a partisan lens. You may think you really want one way, one decision based on who you like right now, but you have to think 4 years, 8 years, 12 years down the road, if someone you don't like is in power, is that still the decision you want to have happen?
That's great. It is a seesaw. It's a teeter-totter. It may feel great right now in the moment, but this is something I think the justices are looking at and trying to figure out, okay, once the political heat is turned down, can this be abused in many other ways? It's a great story that we will continue to follow because it is absolutely fascinating. When we come back, 1.4 million kids in the U.S. take the ACT. Your kid probably just took it if he's a junior in high school. Four-hour monstrosity. I spoke to a high school senior that got a perfect score, and he thought it was made.
I thought that was my golden ticket into any college I wanted, which is not true, really, in retrospect.
Yeah, that golden ticket didn't get him into Wonka's Chocolate Factory. Got rejected from MIT. And then the backup school he thought was a slam dunk got rejected from that as well. We'll find out a little bit more about the ACT and its future here in Utah.